Welcome to the Plus Special Guest podcast number 4, numero cuatro. How's it going, Paul?
Great. I found out a weird fact today while browsing the interwebs.
Is this the Paul's fact of the day brought to you by Abbey View Studios? Is this a thing?
This is my new thing.
Right.
So, from show 5 and 4.
Yeah, this is show 4, so...
Yeah, it's a thing.
Are you a chauffeur for show 4?
Show 4, for sure. So, it's publicly indecent to feed pigeons.
What? It's publicly indecent to feed pigeons?
Apparently, it like takes away their dignity.
What, the pigeon's dignity?
Yeah. It's like if you go and kill something for a wolf and then go, there you go, you know. He wants to hunt
that, so it doesn't take, it takes its animal instincts away.
Yeah, so, but so it's a pigeon.
Is that like a charge then? So like if say show 5 happens and I go, how's it going, Paul? What have you been up to? And you said, I get charged for public indecency. I would presume you were flashing schoolgirls or something.
I thought you were going to say pigeons and I was going to say that could happen, but I'm not going to say that could happen.
I don't know
because it's mainly kind of old folks. So I mean, I'm not going to want that paperwork, are they? Like, I'm just a wee old granny sitting feeding a pigeon. They're not going to cuff her and, you know, pull the policeman's weapon out, you know? I don't think she's going to get Riley.
Stuff that goes through your head.
I know.
I'm going to see next time. Dark place. Next time at Paisley Gilmer Street Station, that's what I'm going to think about when you see the pigeons that have, like, no feet. You alright there?
It's a good...
You alright? Well, Paul's just died and I'm not quite sure what's up with him. He's in tears of laughter. I don't know what's going on.
Lost it.
He's lost it? Why have you lost it? I think he's been publicly indecent with pigeons.
I don't know why I'm crying.
So this is our producer who's like in charge of making sure this show runs properly, and he brings up pigeon stuff and now he's dead.
Was in that water.
We're still recording, Paul. Are you okay? Well, I do the advert. Will you recover if I do the advert?
Yeah, I'm cool.
Right. So, as always, this show is brought to you by The Retro Store. The Retro Store is an awesome way to start your very own collection, whether it's games, comics, and records, and Plus Special Guest customers get a very special discount off their first box. You know about their vinyl boxes. 3 hand-picked albums delivered to your door every month. You know how much it is to buy a record somewhere? They're a fortune. Why not get 3 for £18? When you sign up, you explain what music you love, what music you hate. Tastemakers will choose 3 LPs chosen specifically to your own taste, and each box will include a note explaining why the person has chosen it for you. Members also get exclusive access to the add-on store where you can level up your boxes and save 50% on RRP goods. For example, another 3 records added to your delivery for £10. So I think that's £18 for 6 records. That is a bloody good deal. That's not £18, £28. Paul's thrown me off. I got that wrong last time in the advert
just,
as well.
I'm just staring blankly at the table. I'm trying to remain composed.
If anything, this advert's shown me I'm not very good at maths. 6 records for £28. But you could get a discount if you use the offer code PSGPOD. Over time, members will accrue retro rewards. You can spend your points on gifts, one-off goodies, like their vinyl care kit. They've also got some awesome vinyls in, and also a vinyl cleaning kit called Winyl, which is a brilliant name for a brand. Shipping is completely free across the UK, and the first box is 20% off for listeners using the offer code PSGPOD. So visit theretro.co.uk, use the offer code PSGPOD, support us, support a local Glasgow business, a small Glasgow business. You know, get on it. Why not? Go on, you know you want to. And no public indecency with pigeons, please. Are you okay, Paul? Are you back in it?
I'm fine.
You're fine?
I don't know. Oof. I'm sweating. Let's get to the show.
Well, today's guest is Chris Forbes. You may know Chris Forbes as Today's guest is Chris Forbes. Chris Forbes, you'll know him from Scott Squad. He's in Scott Squad. He's a stand-up comedian. He's a very funny guy. We talk about his early life and how he got into comedy, playing basketball in America, his musical tastes. We talk about quite a few things. It's a good show. Before we head into the show, however, remember and follow us on Facebook and Twitter, plus special guests on Facebook at PSGpod on Twitter. You can listen to our show on iTunes. Please subscribe, rate for us. Subscribe and rate, yep. Acast, Stitcher. We're also on YouTube, so if you prefer like listening on YouTube, do so, subscribe, give us a thumbs up. Nonetheless, on you go, Paul. Play it. I'm with Chris Forbes. How's it going, man?
Hello there. Yes, very well. Thanks. Yourself?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. I'm glad you finally made it. You were in Australia for a bit, weren't you?
I was there, yeah, just over 5 weeks. Wonderful.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Warm. You were touring out there, weren't you?
Yeah, I was doing the Perth Fringe World Festival out there in Western Australia, so it was great. Great shows, nice people, lovely weather.
It all went well then as well. It's probably the best time to go to Australia because it's freezing here.
Exactly.
But it's their summer.
I thought I was going to miss the whole thing, but I came back the Tuesday of Red Alert.
Oh, right.
And I really took that quite personally, to be honest. You
managed to get here. And you've got a few shows coming up as well soon, haven't you? Part of the Glasgow Comedy Festival.
I do, yes. Yeah. I've got my solo show and part of kind of different collaboration shows. So.
Nice. And I was reading into how you got into comedy, and it's quite an interesting story. So you went to America to play basketball.
That's right, yes.
Whereabouts in America?
The beginning tale of any comedy story. I was over in Washington State, a place called Vancouver. So it's just south of, obviously, Vancouver, Canada, but there's a Vancouver in Washington State that was just over the river and bridge from Portland, Oregon. And it was wonderful. Heritage High School. Went over there to play basketball and live the American dream.
So were you pretty good at basketball then? I'd guess, and if you had to go to America then.
I know. Who am I to say? I thought I was very good. Anyway, I'll say that. And then you get over there and it was like, oh, I'm not that great, actually.
I'm just tall and taller than the rest of the people in Scotland.
In Scotland, yeah. And then a comparative tiny person to compared to all the Americans. But no, it was great experience. And certainly improved me as a basketball player as well, as many other things.
And so how did it come about, you going to America? Was it like a kind of draft kind of thing? Or was it just like, actually, I'm just going to America because I want to do basketball?
I wish it was as cool as a draft. But my basketball coach over here, I was playing for Scotland and I was playing for St Mirren National League. And the coach, he kind of set the whole thing up. He's got me in touch with companies that do that type of thing and take students out to further their sporting desires while still keeping, obviously, the academic side of things on track. And his son, who'd also played basketball, had done something similar. So he was instrumental in getting the whole thing to happen.
Mm-hmm. And how did it end up going, right, I'm going to be a stand-up now?
Yeah, it's very odd. I've no idea, really. I've always loved comedy. So first and foremost, that's always lingering in the background. I think of anyone that gets into comedy, you've always loved stand-up, watching it, being around it, learning about the history of it. But when I was out in America, very bizarrely, they had a talent contest for the school, like one of the school shows. And over here, obviously, in Scotland or UK, school shows are mocked. It's not something that happens, But over in America, everything's so big. So if you play in the band, it's massive. Or if the school does a show, the whole community comes out. And the same with all the sports. So the talent show happened and everyone was doing amazing talents. People playing piano and, doing impressions and just athletes doing tumble turns. And I didn't really have a talent, And so I just said I was going to go up on stage and talk about the differences between Scotland and America. Mm-hmm. And I wore my kilt and a See You Jimmy hat. And I did this talk. In my mind, that's what I was doing, just a talk. But
kind of TED talk about Scotland.
Yeah, yeah. But it was a funny talk. So essentially, it was my first ever bit of stand-up. I was going up there to tell funny stories about being a fish out of water, living in America, being this 16-year-old Scottish guy. And really, that lit the flame for me back then. Because I remember thinking that 7-8 minutes that I spoke and was telling jokes and making people laugh was probably more enjoyable than playing basketball for the whole year I was there. I loved playing basketball, but that was on another level. So it just stuck in the back of my mind. So about 8 years later, I finally then braved it when I was back here and and took the plunge.
How did it go when you finally took the plunge?
It was good. You know, I think a lot of people try stand-up, mm-hmm. and a lot of it can rest on that first gig, because I imagine there's a lot of people that have done one gig in their lives and then went, well, I never want to do that again. Yeah. So it has to go reasonably well if you're sane for people to kind of go, yeah, I'll do that again. And it just snowballed, because my very first gig, I met people that I'm still friends with today mm-hmm. in the comedy world. And my very first gig, someone said, oh, that was good, you should come and do this gig. And then at that gig, someone said, oh, you should email the Stan Comedy Club, here's mm-hmm. the email address. And then, you know, it just snowballed.
And is that how, like, Scott Squad came about, or did that?
Yeah, I mean, Scott Squad, for me, it was a bit of both, because I'd eventually gone to college as well. Mm-hmm. When I came home from America, I went to university, but then I went to do acting at college. So I was, not to make it sound too wanky, but I trained actor as well, but I was doing comedy. Mm-hmm. So I'd worked with comedy and I'd been in audition for them for other things and had done bits and bobs. But because they were wanting it to be so obviously comedy focused and they wanted it to be loose and improvised, the fact that I was also doing stand-up comedy mm-hmm. did hold me in good stead, because there was a lot of stand-up comics involved with the it being devised. But I still had to audition for it and go through the process as most of the people did.
Mm-hmm. And as you said, it's quite like it's improvised, a lot of it is improvised. So is there any like standout bits that you're really proud of in Scott Squad going, I just came up with that then?
I guess, I think the very first line that my character says in season one, I was delighted with, because I really didn't think it would make it into mm-hmm. the show. But as a character introduction, when it came to PC Charlie McIntosh, and I said, if you can finger a criminal, you can stop a crime. And I was really pleased with that. And I guess my casual reference that I didn't really mean to the drink Umbungo proved very popular, so that was probably my favourite scene we've done is probably still that one from the very first series, where we find a drunk girl in a bush and I ask her if she was out on her bicycle, and you never know what's going to come out of your mouth really, but it seemed to go quite well.
So see the me and Paul were talking about this earlier, the butter fisting.
Oh,
how much of that was you?
I take it all back. The butter fist is probably the high point in my career, butter fist. And to be honest, the butter fist, the idea generally had come from someone else. And then the director had an idea of what he thought the butterfist should be, and like a producer had his idea of what he thought the butterfist would be, and I had my own idea. And in the end, it was just, I just started talking, and it was a accumulation of everything everyone had been talking about regarding butterfist, you know, this obviously fictional event. But it really, I feel like when I heard it back, I was like, that sounds awesome. Like, I really felt it sounded like a believable event.
And it sounds like one of those crazy things that a village in Scotland would do. Because every village has its own wee thing.
I have no.
I'm surprised. Whoever originally came up with the idea of butterfist and party must have experienced something.
It
so
must
similar.
Be based on something. There's a lot of funny traditions down in the border towns. I know certainly Hoyt and Gala Shields do a lot of crazy things, and way up in the north they've got very bizarre traditions, as you say. So if someone hasn't got something that's very similar, I wouldn't be surprised if someone starts going, well, we should do that, because it sounds pretty awesome.
It'd be amazing if someone actually starts a butter fist. And you were filming something this morning. Are you able to speak anything about that?
Oh, yes. Well, it was just a promotional video. I shouldn't say nothing too fancy, because I should really big up the fact that the charity that we're doing it for is Scottish Sports Futures. I'm an ambassador for that charity. They help disadvantage young people kind of improve their lives through sports. So myself and Karen Barker, Officer Karen from Scott Squad, we were filming a wee promo video, because we were going to be doing that walk for them, which is April Sunday the 29th. If anyone wants to do the kilt walk, sign up for SSF.
And you're also quite involved with the BBC Social.
BBC Short Stuff. Mm-hmm. I work with them, and the Social's a slightly separate entity, but for Short Stuff, I'm pleased to be one of the core contributors for that. And it's obviously, it's just online content, so short, mm-hmm. short, fast, funny sketches, which is something I love doing. And I came from a sketch background before getting into the kind of more straight acting and Scott Squad and stuff. I was in a sketch group with James Kirk and Kevin Maynes, so it was great to keep on being able to do a bit of sketchy work.
So you were saying as well that you were in a few sort of ramshackle bands when you came into the studio.
Yeah, yeah.
Were you a singer? Did you play?
I was a singer, yeah. One of our bands was called Love Gun.
Love Gun.
So I'll give you the idea of just how awful it was, to be honest. But yeah, it was good fun. We mostly did covers, and I would try and write some original pieces of work myself, you know, as a young child. Mm-hmm. But that was actually the inspiration for the show that I'll be doing for the last time at Glasgow Festival, Unquiet Mind. It's got a lot of music in it, actually. Mm-hmm. For the first time, I'm doing quite a lot of music in my show because I found an old cassette tape. And I don't know if you were musical. Mm-hmm. People might remember having cassette tapes, Ghetto Blasters, and like recording yourself.
Well, Paul's got a new cassette out, don't you? It's out there.
A new cassette. Just a cassette. Nice. But, I found one that had an old song I'd written when I was 14 years old called the Pizza Hut song.
Nice.
And it was just about a girl that worked in Pizza Hut. And it was a wonderful, to listen to it back, it was hilarious. You know, it was cringeworthy, but you know, it was kind of cute. And I found it very amusing, but my fiance, she was strangely jealous of something that I recorded over two decades ago.
You're going to have to go out and record something for her now, haven't
well,
you?
That's what I started doing, was I started writing her little funny songs. And I show the comparison of a 14-year-old writing a very romanticised, lovey-dovey, naive look at love compared to now a man who has lost all those notions of love. I'm in a real relationship, so what I do is I write Eleanor realistic love songs, and she doesn't like them, but they're good fun to play at the show.
Nice. Are you able to give us a wee hint of one, or
no,
is it just all for the show?
They're all for the show. The only one genuine love song I've written in the last couple of years, and it's the finale to the show actually, is a song I wrote for Brad Pitt.
As you do.
So it's really worthwhile coming just to hear that song, I would say, honestly. It's very bizarre, but it's a beautiful it's a beautiful piece. Yeah.
And like, who were you mainly listening to when you were a 14-year-old Love Gun person?
You know, I was a real cheesy wee guy, so the people I was playing in that band with were all, you know, rockers. They loved, we were covering kind of AC/DC and Guns N' Roses and Aerosmith and stuff like this, but whereas I grew up listening to a lot of soul music and Motown, and I love the Drifters. The Drifters are one of my favourite bands in the world, so I was a very cheesy child, so bear that in mind if you ever hear me singing songs.
That's not that cheesy, I don't think. The Drifters
are cool, man.
Exactly.
You know?
They've still got a bit of a rep.
I know.
If someone asked you about bands, you went, oh, the Drifters, they go, yeah. He knows his stuff.
But when you're 14 years
old... Well, when you're 14, you'll be like, what?
I worked in Safeway when it was Safeway in Bridge of Weir, and I had to organise our works night out, a Christmas night it was. You know, it was about 15, 16 years ago or something. And because I was in charge, I booked us a wee place in Johnston because they had a Drifters tribute act on.
Nice.
And everyone was like, what have you done? It's like the only one all night singing along. It's wonderful.
So you listen to much the now, or is it still back to your old music that you're listening to? Or
no, I really do love a lot of classical music. So most of my playlist is old stuff like that, Sam Cooke. But who do I like right now? Actually, I'm going to pick up tickets later for a guy that was selling them to a Vance Joy concert.
Vance Joy are good.
In Glasgow. So I'm going to go and see that. I've really enjoyed his couple albums.
He's Australian, isn't he?
Yeah.
You
could
have caught him when you were out there.
I should have.
I think I saw him at
a festival. But can he do it on a cold night Thursday
exactly.
in Glasgow?
Well, time will tell. What was it? Riptide? That was
Riptide was such a big one. Yeah. Yeah. So I can't really think of anyone else. I'm really not that savvy and cool with modern music, unfortunately, but. That's my ticket. My Vance Joy ticket now hopefully gets me out of any of those conversations.
It's another Australian band you should listen to then called Gang of Youths.
All right.
Really good. Both albums are fantastic. And, it's a wee bit of everything in it. Like the start of their second album is like just him playing the piano, and it's like kind of just. I was showing it to someone. Someone went, "This sounds like Elton John." I'm like, "No, no, no! Keep going at it." And then it hits into some more like rock, and it's kind of right. a kind of Americana vibe in there as well.
Nice, that sounds like my kind of stuff.
So if you take anything away from today, listen to Gang of the Youth. So you watching anything good on Netflix or anything? Like, everybody's into Netflix. And
oh, a bit of Netflix.
Or Amazon Prime.
Yeah, what are we watching? You know, we myself and Eleanor, that's my fiancée, we have constant discussions about what to watch, you know, and it can take longer to decide what to watch than actually watching something, but we sometimes will have a trade-off where I'll be like, do you want to watch this? And she doesn't want to watch something, but she'll want to watch the other thing. So we'll kind of maybe do episode around.
Yeah.
So we'd started watching The Crown. She was very keen to watch that, and I wanted to watch Peaky Blinders.
Right,
it's very weird to watch them kind of one after the
other. It's a bit total different vibes going on, kind of.
And I really kept pretending I was really not enjoying The Crown. I was like, I'm watching The Crown, man, The Queen, and I hate it. And you know, but I realised it was getting to me, man. You know, just it slowly was seeping into my nature. And then I was watching one episode, and I felt really, it really hit me that they wouldn't let Prince Philip fly his plane. And I was like, who have I become? Why am I feeling sorry for this guy?
Because they wouldn't tricky. It's like when you go into somewhere and they've got like EastEnders on and something I've never watched, but I'm automatically going, so what's Danny Dyer done here? and then the next time it's like 3 weeks later and it's like, is this the same storyline? Was he still happening? And they're like, no.
Yeah. But I tell you, actually, the last thing I watched that I absolutely loved was Godless. I thoroughly enjoyed
it. I've seen
that.
It. I've not watched it yet. I've saw the wee kind of trailer thing that Netflix put on and I was like, I need to watch that.
I'm a sucker for a Western as well. So that was, it's very nicely done. Very nicely done.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen any of the kind of sci-fi ones they've put up, like Mute, for the new Duncan Jones one?
I've been hearing about that.
A lot of people don't like it, and I can understand. I can kind of get some of it, but it is still really—it's really interesting.
Someone said it has a wee link to Moon and like, the characters.
There's that, like, well, the link to Moon is it's on the news.
Oh right,
it's like he's sitting in a cafe and the TV's on, and it's like. Basically Sam Rockwell in like court, and then there's like all the other Sam Rockwells, that's the link to Moon. So it exists in
just
the same
wee...
it's like a nod to it, but he says it's like an unofficial sequel. I hope he gets more out of it, because I think he was on the old Nerdist podcast, which is now ID10T, and he was talking about a trilogy of sorts and how it would be his version of the Cornetto trilogy.
I see, I will. I'll watch it. That's one thing. I'm a big movie guy, so I will try and watch everything and anything, really, even if it's been deemed shit. Sometimes that's all the more reason to watch something. You know?
I think if you go in thinking it'll be shit, you'll enjoy it. I think if you think, oh, this is going to be brilliant, maybe a little bit let down, and that's maybe what people is going for. Because that and Altered Carbon as well, that is really good, the series. It's kind of Blade Runner-y, future Japanese kind of style. It's really good, though.
Good.
They're really, really good. I'm watching, have you heard of The Americans?
The Americans, is that the kind of spy undercover?
Brilliant. I literally would have been late here this morning if I hadn't turned it off. I'm on season 4 now, and like something else happened, and you're like, oh no!
Oh man.
And it's they do it really annoyingly, like, so like in like breaks between end scenes, you know, where the screen goes black and that, they wait like maybe 5 seconds, and it's the longest 5 seconds, and you're like, and then it'll go into another scene, you're like, oh good, but then something big will happen, you're like, oh, and then all of a sudden the credits start, and you're like, oh god damn it. But I recommend that to watch it. Really,
I tell
good.
You another thing we watched, I really love touting British dramas, you know, because quite often everyone gets kind of carried away with American stuff because it's big budget and it's glossy, but especially when if you've got an American one and it's, you know, 20 episodes long or something, it's a lot of fillers, a lot of guff. But when a British drama gets it right in 6 episodes, I always think that's amazing because there's no filler there at all. So I loved Save Me that was just on recently. It was a Sky Atlantic show, and it's like an all-star cast, absolutely incredible. That and Happy Valley, for me, were two of the best TV shows of the last decade, to be honest. Both excellent. So a wee shout-out to British drama.
Nice. I've not heard of Save Me. It's one that's not on my radar.
Yeah, it's great. Did you see...
Lenny James is on it, and
Yeah, got Stephen Graham.
Stephen Graham. He's, and that's me in right away there.
Oh. As well.
Yeah.
Ah, he plays Al Capone, doesn't he?
Because there was talks about, I don't know whether it happened, because I've seen bits of Peaky Blinders. Right. It's not something I've got fully into yet. And there was loads of rumours that they were trying to get him to play Al Capone again in it.
Ah, right. That'd be good.
A bit of a nice wee intertwingle. But yeah. What is it? Is Tom Hardy not going to play Al Capone in something else now as well?
I thought I heard that.
Too busy being Venom. Really, like that Venom trailer, like I really liked the look it, and then people were going, you don't see Venom in it though, and I was like, yeah, but that's people were like, I saw someone writing a massive complaint about like the comment section, you know what it's like massive complaint about how this doesn't show you anything, and I'm like, well, the problem with trailers now is they show you far too much. I'm happy they don't show me anything.
I know they get carried away, but it's funny, you just reminded me, I must check I've got that all sorted for next week. But just when you said a comment section, you know, is nuts and these types of things. But part of my show that I'm doing in Unquiet Mind is I went undercover as a guy called Jordan Sebroff. Used an old photo of myself. And I lived on social media for a year, mm-hmm. in preparation just to interact with nut jobs online. And then I've chosen maybe half a dozen of the best interactions, and I talk about them in the show. And they're incredible.
I could imagine they'd be brilliant.
Oh my God. And I thought it would be, I was trying essentially to get involved with people that would be going mad about, you know, supporting Trump, mm-hmm. and like riling up old firm fans and stuff like that. But the big issues, they're not the ones that people really go nuts about.
Oh, it's the daft stuff thing.
Like Venom trailers, yeah. or a guy was, he was losing his mind about pizza toppings. And, you know, I just play it all very neutral. So I'm just kind of asking leading questions and just watching people going absolutely nuts. It's beautiful.
Stirring up old firm fans must be fun, seeing that you're an Aberdeen fan.
Yeah, I did my best with that as well. But that took a really weird twist as well, without giving away too much. I really thought it would go nuts, and then a really eloquent old firm fan responded in a way that no one would expect. So it was, yeah, again, just I'll just leave that as a teaser.
Plenty of teasers for this show. And I think I need to go myself now.
Please do.
And Aberdeen are doing, they're trying to be the, if we want to talk about football, because I know you appear on a football podcast, you have appeared on a football podcast.
Yeah. No, I love football. I mean, I love sport still, mm. just overall, but football's great. And it feels like quite a thin allegiance now, yeah. but Aberdeen was the team that I kind of grew up supporting. But I love using the analogy. People have said, you know, you can be a fan or a supporter. Mm-hmm. And I would say I'm an Aberdeen fan, but I couldn't class myself a supporter because I'm not at the games, you know, I'm not spending any money. But it's what's upsetting for me right now is they've been phenomenal the last few years and trying to take over that void that Rangers left. And sadly, it looks like with Rangers kind of coming back into the fold, is this the start of it just going back to being, you know, Celtic Rangers domination? And I feel like this is the last season that anyone's got a chance, Aberdeen or Hibs, to push for the second spot, which mm-hmm. is all anyone will ever get to challenge for right now. And if we don't finish second again this season, then I think that could be the last time for a while, sadly.
Mm. It's weird that the whole of Scotland, even though we have no allegiance to Aberdeen, just someone else outside the old firm to do something. We've done it with Hearts when Hearts nearly got there.
Exactly.
And then, you kind of get there, and then you just fall at the last hurdle. And
even any of the cups, you know, mm-hmm. because they really did take over that, well, we're the second best team in the country, so all the finals seem to be Celtic-Aberdeen, mm-hmm. but every single final, Aberdeen were just blown away by Celtic. And then this season, the big thing was the two games against Rangers.
Yeah, with the Derek McInnes scenario as well. And
dearie me, so... Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's all gone quite bleak. So,
well, I'm a St Mirren fan. We're top of the league again.
Oh, you guys are flying,
flying the now, and we got our cup as well.
That's it.
That was brilliant. The semi final against Celtic was outstanding. Especially Scott Brown. You love him in a Scotland shirt. You hate him in a Celtic shirt. Because like when Celtic went 1-0 up, he went up to St Mirren fans and done his celebration, and then we obviously beat them 3-2, and you're like, get up.
I keep an eye on St Mirren. A lot of my good friends are big St Mirren fans because. Obviously, growing up, Bridge of Weir, they were the closest kind of team, really. And it's nice to see them doing well.
As long as it may continue.
Bizarrely, I actually met up with Stephen McGarry.
Oh, really?
Out in Australia.
Well, he's in Perth, isn't he? Because I lived in Australia for a bit in Sydney, and Perth Glory were out playing I just Sydney. It wasn't the other one, the Western Sydney one. And it was like Del Piero's like 500th league game of all time or something that. And I was like to him on Twitter, I was like, can I get a complimentary ticket? And he was like, yeah, no problem, come along. I was like, yeah.
It's great. Yeah, we played some beach volleyball football with him.
Beach volleyball football.
yeah. So volleyball, but we were only allowed to kick it and use headers and stuff. So it was hilarious. It was great to really, you know, spike Steve McGarry with an overhead kick.
He's just, I don't know if you're aware, he's just got a street named after him as well.
Is that right?
Yes. So where the old Love Street's been knocked down, they're building the houses. Ah. There was like a supporters, like you could put in names
right.
for the streets.
Suggesting.
Mark Yardley, of course, got one, which I'm glad about. Really want to stay in Mark Yardley Street or whatever. Stephen McGarry got one as well, but I think it was partly him and partly his dad as well. His dad's a big St Mirren fan right. who sadly passed away not so long ago and left. But yeah, so he's now got his own
That's
street.
That's great.
Because it was quite funny because David Van Zanten was up there for a while for Van Zanten Street.
Nice.
And when I gave it a wee vote just because I thought it'd be quite funny to see a Van Zanten Street.
Yeah.
And he was in the top five being chosen, and he was in the wavering about the top five for quite a while, but I think he just lost out. I don't know who he lost out to, but
it would be nice to see that in amongst all the Scottish names.
Van Zanten Row or something. I put in Ludo Lane for Ludwig Roy, but we never get picked.
Van Zanten feels like more of an avenue.
Van Zanten Avenue. Or
it's
Van
a good name for a band, actually. Yeah. Van Zanten Avenue.
There you go. Anyone listening that wants to start up a new band, or if David Van Zanten himself is listening, Van Zanten. I've not got it in my notes, but I've just remembered there. Well, you've also got that kind of alter ego, Damien.
Oh, Damien Crowe.
He's not tweeted in a while, I've noticed.
He's an interesting guy. Aye. He's gone dark. He's gone. he's funny, you know. He only comes out once in a blue moon, and he will hibernate for a long time. But yeah, he's, you know, essentially the world's worst goth is his whole get up. So he's just a miserable wee teen that's. Lives with an adoring, loving family, and he has everything he needs. So, trying to be a rebellious youth when you've nothing to rebel against is very amusing. And it just so happens that he plays the accordion as well, which
as
really,
all goths should.
Which really, really flies in the face of everything he's trying to achieve. You know, he kind of wants to screw the world, but it's hard to screw anyone with an accordion. So,
well, yeah.
But yeah, he'll be out and about. Certainly sooner rather than later.
I'll keep my eye. It's funny that you're saying about the accordion there, Matt. Boss at O2, he plays the accordion played the accordion when he was in school, but you wouldn't expect it. He's a bit he thinks he's a bit like a lad kind of thing, and you know, got God's gift to women and all that. And comes out with play the accordion. You're like,
there's nothing like it instrument wise for people to be like, what? When you pull out an accordion, it's very unusual.
I'd love to be that person that played a different instrument than a guitar, though. Yeah. You know, just like when you get that person at a party that pulls out a guitar and you kind of roll your eyes a bit and you're like, oh, you just go in the cupboard and come out with like a saxophone or something. Just something crazy.
Well, I was kind of the opposite, because I was given the accordion first as a young child of the Highlands. It was kind of a rites of passage, and I grew to hate it. You know, I hated the fact that I had this accordion and was trying to play Celtic music. You know, it's kind of quite, again, when you're a teenager, it's not cool. So I was delighted when I finally got a guitar, and I felt like it made me more street cred worthy, you know. But it's a shame, because I really played the accordion for a long time and at competitions and stuff, but I really let it slide. And I only play it to a certain level now.
Well, we're talking about Scott Squad. Is there any plans of that coming back?
There is certainly plans, and you know, talks are ongoing. I believe in a football analogy style, that the advanced talks are being made, but certainly nothing is confirmed, and I can't say either way at this stage.
But that is something I think we need more of, is more Scottish comedy on. But mainstream TV.
Yeah.
Because like we've got Still Game's back just now. Obviously the episode tonight's apparently where someone's gonna pass away.
I hear that. Yeah.
Yeah. We had Scott Reed in.
Oh, last, nice. Okay. Mick, isn't he?
Yeah. Try to get a few hints off him, he was having none of it. but I was watching BBC the other day, and it was another kind of coast style programme, you know, like right. something to do with the Shetlands. And I was like, how many, like, oh, these yeah. programmes are interesting, but yeah. how many of them do we actually need? And could they possibly put more money into, like, the Scottish comedy scene just to get some more actually on a mainstream time?
Yeah, it's there's so much that goes on behind the scenes, you know, at Network and in the BBC that people, it would blow people's minds, you know, a lot of the time people say, why isn't there more of this, or why isn't this on then? And but the scheduling conflicts and budgets involved, and what's just BBC Scotland and what's Network, and even though I'm just giving away industry secrets, but even though BBC Scotland is its own channel on its own right, it still has to schedule around what the Network channel has. So they're only allotted two slots for comedy specific in BBC Scotland. So it really has to tailor around what's already been deemed the schedule by the bigwigs in London. So unfortunately, we're always kind of a little bit still subject to approval in a way, in terms of what we can get on and what we can't. But it does always mean that there can only generally be two comedies on at any one time. I think the most they had was three when they were doing Limmy, Tank Commander and Scott Squad or something. It was like, wow, there's three Scottish comedies on. And now it's gone back down. I think there's actually only one BBC Scotland made one, which is Scott Squad. And the others are all
still
two doors down still game. So yeah, it's a tough old game, but so that all the more reason to be thankful that we've been lucky to make four seasons of Scott Squad, and you know, fingers crossed there'll be a fifth.
And hopefully there will be a fifth. I think there's enough public demand for it. And I also saw yous at the wrestling; that was quite nice.
Deary me, yeah, Darren Connell, he actually broke a rib that night.
I have listened to that podcast where he was telling us about. He was telling you about it.
I might have been the one I did with him. Yeah. Oh man, his bruising was unbelievable, but he didn't want to say anything on the night because he was like just getting into it all. And the next day,
how did it happen? Because he kind of talks about how he got steaming and then broke his ribs, and then there was no link. Yeah. He was
pulled over the railing when it kind of all kicks off, and I think it was essentially when he was pulled over, he kind of landed on the top of it. But yeah, I'm sure he really wasn't that bothered, really, because he loved it.
Probably all the adrenaline in it. Probably felt it the next morning, like, oh,
I know.
God.
It wasn't until the next day he realised. He was like, oh, my goodness.
So we also have a Spotify playlist that we ask guests all to put one track into.
Nice.
So I probably should have warned you a wee bit earlier, but you've got some good
Harlem
music.
Child, The Drifters.
Oh, straight away with The Drifters. Yeah. So is that your favourite song by The Drifters then?
Yeah, I mean, they're all great. They're all great. But that's, I remember when I was younger, I had a cassette tape that had, I had like one of, you know, remember the cassette box you could get? It had four tapes, open like double or on both sides. So it had like four different.
God, I totally forgot about that until you mentioned that there. That's totally.
So I had a Drifters, I had four different cassettes, and one of them, only one of them, and I'd never had it in any of the other tapes that I had or CDs, and it had a song on it called Harlem Child. And I absolutely loved it. And then when I got older and we'd lost those tapes, and I literally couldn't find it on any CD, I couldn't find it anywhere. Until about 5 years ago, I managed to find a CD, and just one that had a kind of best of, and it was the only one that had Harlem Child on it. Wonderful song.
Wonderful song.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, I'll wrap it up there. Thank you for coming on.
Not a problem.
And telling us about The Drifters. Cheers, man. Thanks.
Cheers, thanks.